Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 371. I'm your host, John Reardon, joined, as usual, by Neil Ronahan.
Hello, hello. I'm here to recap. You know what? This wasn't E3. It wasn't E3. It wasn't even not E3. It was just a series of things that happened in a row.
I don't know.
There's a certain vibe that I think you can't replicate. Like, well, no matter how hard they try, it is locked to a period of time in the world.
It's weird because, I was going to say it's weird because I don't really want them to either. Like, it feels like Jeff Keighley has like ripped the skin off of E3 and is wearing it as a suit and parading around trying to trick everyone.
I did like the hard drive article that was like Jeff Keighley has one final reveal, and it's like just his face looks like his face is ripped off and he's a Terminator. But talking to people who were at, we had Alex Arona and Joel DeWitt were both at Summer Games Fest Play Days, I think is what it's called. They had like a two day relatively low key like show floor. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it was in LA around this time of year, but it wasn't E3 because it's still like it's invite only. We got invited because there were Switch games. But it's still like it's more curated than an E3 is. And like, Xbox wasn't there. Nintendo wasn't there. Sony wasn't there. There was a good spread of games. Like, I mean, Sonic seems to be a mainstay of the Summer Games Fest Play Days because Frontiers was there last year, Superstars was there this year. But like, you're not going to get to the level of pomp and circumstance, mostly because I think financially it's not worth it. And two, it's just that, like, that's not, the industry is different now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say we have several previews from Joel and Alex up on the site if you're interested. Any of the things that they saw.
And Alex got on the giant bomb couch.
Yes. Yes, he did. So I believe that was his only goal. That was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming he's just going to quit the site now.
He tweeted a picture and I like immediately messaged him. Was like, dude, you did it.
he declared his intentions and made it.
I've not gone to listen to it. Apparently he defended your Zelda score.
Oh, did he? Did my score get brought up?
Somebody apparently said, like, why so low?
For a 9.5. I mean, that's my answer to those questions is always like, well, that's what the entire text of the review is about. Like, it's, guess what? I gave you like 3 pages explaining exactly why.
As every podcast will for the near future will be us talking about Tears of the Kingdom. The farther I get into Tears of the Kingdom, the more I completely adore this game. But I think I'm with you probably for slightly different reasons in that, like, I don't think I'd give it a 10, if only because I think the story is like horrific.
It's
like Breath of the Wild is like, I know some people are kind of more down on that story, but I felt like the story fit with the themes. It was an interesting approach. And
it
Tears of the
sense.
Kingdom is like.
The way they did it made sense in the context of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas like, here it feels forced.
Yeah. Like my biggest pro for Breath of the Wild is just that, like, it's video game storytelling with the way that you discover the memories as you go and it kind of, you piece it together and it tells a fuller story. But I also think with Breath of the Wild, there's no like spoiler reveals tied in the memories. Like if you get them out of order, it doesn't break it because you kind of already know what happens at the end. Y'all lose. Whereas in Tears of the Kingdom, there are reveals tied to the memories. Mm-hmm. Like I know Matt had this experience, and I think he's madder about it than I am. For me, it's more I'm madder that the story's bad, not so much of the way that it was doled out, but the way it's doled out is kind of silly because you can do it where you're like, okay, so this is what's happening with Zelda, and you get the next one, and you're like, okay, that's the end of the story. And then you just get all this stuff in the middle that doesn't really like go one way or the other. It's sloppy, but the gameplay and like I got to Lurelin Village recently. I don't know if you got that. That feels like a thing
I did go do. That was like a post credit. It was a thing that I had seen that quest pop up like right away. And I'm like, that is not a main part of this game. I need to get through it for the review. But once I rolled credits, once the review was up, the first thing I did was like, I want to go do that quest.
Yeah.
And it was a fun time.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, I guess without getting into any details, I feel like as I talk to more people, like folks listening to shows have played way less of this game than we have.
Yeah.
So I'll be respectful of that and just say like the southeastern region of Hyrule, that is where I'm exploring now. And I had some really fun quest lines there.
Yeah.
Just like real entertaining stuff. But the main story is ass.
Yeah. And we've said this before, but it shows that the side quests in this one were an intentional thing that was worked on presumably throughout the entire development. And not as in Breath of the Wild, where that stuff worked, but it was largely added in pretty late in the game. And you can tell it's the quest lines in this feel like those side adventures actually feel compelling. It's kind of the Xenoblade 1 versus Xenoblade 3 thing as far as the side quests go of like, oh, I actually want to do them in this one. They actually feel like they matter.
Yeah, I feel like every time I've talked about Tears of the Kingdom, and probably will, it's just me being like, main story bad. Side quest good.
So the thing that bothers me more and more as time passes, because that's like my opinion evolves over time. The thing that bothers me more and more about the story as time passes has become less that I find it boring and more that like, while I don't think these games need to like follow the timeline and be consistent with each other, that's all fine. This can be whatever it wants to be on its own. It's very hard to rectify Tears of the Kingdom with itself, like the backstory the plot of Tears of the Kingdom makes it very hard for Ocarina to happen, but Ocarina sure as fuck happened based on the world of Tears of the Kingdom. And so it's like, it's not even about like oh, it's not consistent with the lore. It's like it struggles to be consistent like with itself. Like you don't need to like try to link it to any other games to run into timeline problems. You just have to like watch the backstory and then go to the Great Plateau and just go, huh, like it's a little difficult to figure out.
I mean, it's also, I feel like, there are reasons why it does work, but I think the fact that like there's so many unanswered questions that it's like the Back to the Future problem that I will have qualms about with Avengers Endgame, but I do like how they addressed the timey-wimey-ness of their time travel stuff by just kind of like dunking on other time travel pop culture. Like, I think that's an effective manner to basically just say like, none of this really matters. Just enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Tears of the Kingdom doesn't really do that. And also there's a lot of things in Tears of the Kingdom that just don't add up with Breath of the Wild.
Right. Well, the problem is that Breath of the Wild and then by extension Tears of the Kingdom, by using the same world, like shoves that in your face so clearly. Like the beginning of Breath of the Wild is a game. It shoves you out there and be like, look, Ocarina happened. Like that's the first thing you see in Breath of the Wild. And then Tears of the Kingdom is like, I don't know if that happened. It's like, well, it's all here. It kind of has to have. I don't know. It's
the answer to the timeline for Tears of the Kingdom is just the people, you know, Anuma, Fujibayashi, just being actively antagonistic to anybody who cares about the timeline.
Yeah, well,
one hand, it's very funny. It's funny.
And if it was just that, then it wouldn't bother me. And I think it was funny. It's just that they're being antagonistic to their own, like once again, you do not have to leave Tears of the Kingdom to run into timeline problems because it's just the timeline of Tears of the Kingdom that doesn't make sense.
And also the story's bad.
but like building shit's fun. Anyway, 9.5. Yeah. Let's lower it to a 9. Is it too late to call Metacritic? What's the time limit?
No, I'm still on team 9.5 I'm 80 hours in and probably have another 80 hours to go.
It's a solid 7.5.
And you know what? Every game's that, except for Super Mega Baseball 4. That game is perfect.
I don't know. I heard the load times were kind of long.
They're a little rough.
Listen, we should probably talk about what we're actually supposed to be talking about, and not just Zelda every single episode.
Until Pikmin 4, then Pikmin 4 is probably going to
get a
10, guys.
We'll do Pikmin 4 for like 2 weeks, and then it'll loop back around to Zelda again. But we're going to start with some listener mail that has a little bit to do with some of the event. I don't want to call it like Summer of Game or Summer Games Fest or whatever, because like technically none of these events were related to each other. They just all kind of agreed to happen at the same time.
Yeah, they were planning for E3, and then E3 didn't happen because they all backed out.
So everything just sort of lined up. So don't give Jeff Keighley credit for like any of the good things that happened, because like none of the good shows were part of his thing. Anyway, Chariot Goblin writes in and says, "Hey, Connectivity, the Xbox showcase had a huge blowout on Starfield. This may be the biggest open world game ever created. Customization looks fast as well. Do you think this game has the chance of overtaking Tears of the Kingdom in various Game of the Year awards? Since this is a pro Star Fox podcast, how do you feel about this game's spaceship combat? Thanks." Spaceship combat looks good.
Level, yeah, on a personal level, like, no, not for me. As far as overall Game of the Year awards, also no. It's not that I don't think it has a shot. I think now that we've seen Tears of the Kingdom's response, I still think that Starfield, some of it's by Xbox's own doing. There is, I heard this quote in real time and rolled my eyes, and have since seen a lot of people dunk on it a lot. I believe it was Sarah Bond from Xbox, was just that, like, and then after this showcase, we're going to show you like the most important RPG of all time, Starfield. And it's the kind of thing where when you verbalize a game like that, that is an impossible expectation. And yes, Zelda or Nintendo definitely knew with Tears of the Kingdom that like they had a golden goose, and they marketed it to high hell, and you know they took that washcloth and wrang it dry. But I don't think you ever heard like Anuma come out and just be like, "This is the most important video game ever made," because then it's an impossible expectation that it can't ever live up to.
Yeah, and my fear with Starfield, and I will, like, just to be clear, outside of Zelda, Starfield is my most hyped game of the year. Like, I am excited for Starfield.
I am also very excited for it. Yeah. It's extremely a John game as opposed to a Neil game.
Sure.
But even still, like, I don't think it's not going to top Super Mega Baseball 4 Theater Rhythm for me, probably, but it could easily be a top fiver for me, because guess what? Skyrim's great.
Right. Well, and that would be, so my concern, I don't know when the last time you played Skyrim is, but like that game has aged.
Switch 2017, 2018.
Right. Like that game has shown some age, and my fear with Starfield.
It is over a decade old.
Right. As it should. My fear with Starfield is that it will ultimately feel like an old Bethesda game. I think that was kind of one of the issues I ran into with Fallout 4, was that it didn't feel like they had evolved much from like the 360 era. And I'm hoping that won't be the case for Starfield, but we'll see. It does look like they're being a lot more adventurous with this than I think they were in Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Fallout 4 very much felt like an attempt to do Fallout 3 again. And they made some interesting
Fallout
narrative
4 came out.
One of these days I'll download it again and force myself to get through it. They made some interesting narrative choices and presentational choices that I just didn't like.
It is very funny that, I mean, in a way, Skyrim launching around the same time as Skyward Sword is how we got Breath of the Wild, because 3D Zelda was very like staid in its presentation and execution, and Skyrim was like a trailblazer back in 2011.
Now
we're at a point where, granted, I mean, Tears of the Kingdom is Breath of the Wild but better, but I mean, what is Skyrim but Oblivion but better? That I think you're right that we might get to a point where Tears of the Kingdom's like this bold new hotness, and Starfield is just like, oh, they made another one of those games that they made 12 years ago.
I hope that's not the, like, once again, I do feel like the like the 45 minute long presentation they had after the Xbox showcase for this honestly made me a lot more confident in it. From what I've heard, like that year long delay was essentially a polish delay, that it was like not in horrible shape at this time of last year, but like they took that year to really just like this has to land. If you compare, like there are some spots in that trailer where you see areas that were in last year's trailer, and you can tell like it visually looks different. Like they've really done a lot to clean it up. And I hope that this can carry that legacy of Skyrim more than Fallout 4 did, in being like one, like you kind of alluded to, Skyrim really was the Breath of the Wild equivalent of 2011. Like it was the reason that game stuck around so long is that it was the game. It kind of reinvented and changed what open worlds would be. It was the game that everyone else impersonated for a long time. It's a huge influence on Breath of the Wild. There is a chance that Starlink builds off of, like, there was
Starfield.
Starfield, yeah, wrong one.
Freudian slip.
There's a chance that it builds off some things from Breath of the Wild, and you know, can evolve past that in some ways. But we'll just have to wait and see. As far as like, do I think it could overtake Zelda for Game of the Year for me? I mean, I think it's unlikely, but I'm not going to rule it out. Like you said, this is a game that like really appeals to me. People have been comparing it to No Man's Sky as if to be like, oh, it's just like No Man's Sky. And I would compare it to No Man's Sky being like, good, like, great. That's like, that was like a super like revolutionary game from a technical perspective. Let's actually build off of that and like go further with it. And that kind of feels like, and it's not doing exactly the same thing. It doesn't have that like continuous, like seamless world that No Man's Sky does. But it is using procedural generation. It is, you know, mixing that with more authored environments to sort of fix some of the things that didn't work as well as in No Man's Sky. So like that comparison is fair, and I'm excited to see how they can evolve on that as well. But yeah, and as to the space combat stuff, I am excited that it feels like they are implementing things, not just that you would expect to see in a Bethesda RPG, but things that you'll see more often in like space sims. Like they showed in that direct, your ship coming into like an actual like civilized planet, and you being scanned by their law enforcement for contraband before you can land, which is not something that's strange to space sims. But it's not really something that we generally see in like RPGs. Like it's something that's coming in from this other genre. And if you played that genre, then you recognize it, but it is new to this. And that's very exciting to see those two genres kind of meet.
It's funny because it makes me think of some like Zaya and Star Wars Outer Rim tabletop board games that I've played that kind of have.
Sure. Yeah,
space sim elements, which I don't, if you've never heard of Xia, X-I-A, you should look it up. It's a dope as hell board game.
But yeah, I'm excited for it. I hope it's good. But that leads us kind of into just the Xbox showcase in general, which Neil and I talked about this a little bit shortly after it. And I think we have, here's what I'll say. I don't think we actually have that different of opinions on it. I think we just latched onto different things more tightly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what it comes down for me is I think it was before this, you could capture it in the NWR Discord before it happened, is I was like, Starfield needs to look great. My Xbox needs to have a roadmap for the next year or two. Starfield looks good. Like, I think there are definitely from the Starfield Direct, and you showed a lot of the game, so there's definitely, it's not going to look flawless, but like I'm excited for Starfield. Like, let's go. That looks fun. Mm-hmm. I don't think they really showed a good roadmap of when anything is coming out. Like, they started off their show with Fable and the Compulsion Games. I can't even think of the name, which
South of Midnight.
I watched it. Yeah, South of Midnight. Like, I watched it. I forgot your name. None of those had dates. Like,
right. They had a year. They did give them a year. Yeah, they were all 2024. They did have years assigned to them, just not.
Did Fable actually have a date? I could have sworn that Fable did not have.
I think Fable is just
TBD. If that's the case, I still think they should have been more specific, at least with one game, to be like here or like first half of 2024.
Yeah, I can. I don't disagree. But what I will say, given their track record, is that they, for the past several years, have put dates on things and missed them. So given the choice of them saying it's coming out in January or them and then having it actually come out in, you know, June versus them saying it's coming out in 2024 and then coming out in June. I think it looks better for them to hit that initial release date.
I mean, they committed to that Starfield one and then delayed it.
Right, exactly. They did the same thing with Redfall, and then it wasn't good. I think they're being very careful.
And I understand they're being cautious, but it's still disappointing to see that, like, okay, you guys, once again, just, you know, okay, Starfield does, you're pinning all your hopes on Starfield. If Starfield is not the greatest RPG of all time, then what is even going on with Xbox next year? I think
Starfield absolutely needs to do well. And I think it's good that they have a Bethesda RPG to pin their hopes on. They're not all perfect, but it's a somewhat known quantity.
And also, it was like another bone of contention is that I know that technically, the Xbox Game Studios trailers were in engine, but like, tell me what the gameplay of all these games that they showed are, because I mean, I guess like Fable, I can assume plays like a Fable game, but like that trailer, I was more fixated on that they got a very nice looking Richard Iota as opposed to anything else about the game.
Right. I mean, it was definitely showing. So I will clarify, you are right. There is no date on Fable.
I think South of Midnight I thought was the same way, but I'm not as interested in that game, so it didn't bother me as much.
I will say on Fable that they have come out and clarified that all of the footage in there was captured on Series X, so not like a PC target render, and some of it's cutscenes, but like there's also gameplay interspersed in there, like just straight up gameplay, which is obviously there's no HUD, which I assume is where people are, you know, running into trouble with it. But that's just one where I've seen that a lot, where it was like, oh, this was all cutscenes. Then you're watching it, and it's like, well, no, it's there's definitely like there's some combat gameplay in there, and there's some very obvious just like third person platforming gameplay in there. I think people were distracted trying to decide if the like kind of interview segment was a pre-rendered thing or not, which it's not.
Which is that's cool, but I also think that like that's more of like a that's neat from a technical level. Like I'm not here to look at technical specs. I'm here to play a video game.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. I will say that it had a very good effect within like the more technical side of the community, as far as Xbox, since launching the Series X, has not had a first party thing that showed what the system could do. Coming out of the gate with something that's just like, and it should say in that it says in-game footage, it should say, if this is true based on what the developers have said, it should just say captured from Series X, because that's much more impressive. But coming out of the gate with something that absolutely looks on par with what PlayStation is doing as far as like quality, I think it sets a very good first impression, even if it's not just, you know, straight gameplay, which I agree is much more interesting to me. But we did see more of that kind of stuff later on in the show.
Yeah. I didn't realize is the new Stoic Games, is that an Xbox Studios published game?
Which one?
Towerborn.
Yes.
Stoic. Yeah, Stoic. Yeah, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Did they buy Stoic, or is that just
probably? I mean, either them or Embracer. Say, like
the Banner Saga trilogy is incredible.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And like it is like you look at their 2024 lineup from what they had: Hellblade 2, Avowed, and Clockwork Revolution. Probably. I mean, Avowed looks cool. I think Obsidian makes good games. It is funny that most of their games are just like, okay, so we bought Bethesda. What do we have coming out of the Bethesda game? More games that are like Bethesda games.
Yep. I will say, so I was watching, they did their like extended showcase yesterday. Yeah. And they were talking to, I think maybe the director of Avowed or one of the higher ups on that at Obsidian. And the interviewer is like, so is this going to carry over any of the characters or anything from Pillars of Eternity? And I go, hold up. Is Avowed a sequel?
It's in the same universe.
Right. And so they're talking about, I'm like, oh, crap. I can't go into something without knowing lore. So I downloaded Pillars of Eternity last night and started that today, which I'm enjoying so far. Just a very.
Yeah. Because that's those are the ones that are more CRPGs, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very, very Dungeons and Dragons-y, which.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't always work in video game form, but this seems good so far.
Yeah, and like, I mean, that's the thing is that, like, I look at some of their lineup and I'm like, cool, but also I feel like it's a double-edged sword where, like, on one hand, I understand why they're not giving exact dates, and I feel like it's worth noting, too, even though it's not my jam, Forza is coming out in October. That got a release date. Yep. So to credit where credit's due, they have two games coming out for the rest of the year, at least. But 2024, if Hellblade 2, Avowed, and Clockwork Revolution, even if I don't think Clockwork Revolution looked that great, maybe it'll be cool. If those three games do come out in 2024 and there's something else, or like another game or two that will probably Flight pop Sim. Up. Yeah, Flight Sim as well. Then cool. That sounds good. But given Xbox's track record, out of Avowed, Clockwork Revolution, and Hellblade 2, how many of those actually come out in 2024?
Hellblade 2 better, honestly. That was the one of all of, like, obviously I would love for all these 2024. You were thinking, like,
could it come out in November or something?
Hellblade was one that I was honestly expecting to come out this year. So seeing that go to 2024, granted, I think that's the first time any sort of date has been on it. Like, it's kind of like when people are like, oh, they delayed Zelda, but it's like, no, this is the first time they've given a date. Like, that's kind of the situation Hellblade is in. But given how long ago that was announced, I was really hoping that that would be coming out for November.
Still, I mean, it is the kind of thing, and I understand, like, I mean, once again, this is Xbox hyping up their thing so much, but they're like, we're talking about beyond the next 12 months on, like, last year. It's going to be incredible. Yeah. And it's like, okay, are you guys going to talk about Everwild or Perfect Dark? No? Okay.
Yeah, well, those...
You could have just said we're talking about, like, the rest of the 2023 lineup and potentially games beyond that. Like...
I will say, based on what we know about the development of Perfect Dark, that game is essentially is less than 2 years into development because it had a full reboot.
And I believe Everwild's trailer, like, they basically were like, this is going to be a game. And then there was a trailer, and
Everwild has changed hands. I mean, it's still Rare, but, like, the directors have quit multiple times.
Okay.
Yeah, Everwild is in. I don't know if Everwild is actually happening or not. I think they also got distracted by Sea of Thieves being just a stupid success.
You know what's a bummer with the Monkey Island stuff? Like, Ron Gilbert doesn't really approve. Like, that's just disheartening.
Well, he said he didn't know, right?
Well, no, I think they said they gave him a heads up, but that was it.
Oh, okay. That was the story I had seen was that he didn't know it was happening.
Yeah, I think that was because I think he commented on it because people were misreporting it.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's...
He basically said, like, they gave me a heads up, but nothing further, and eh.
I mean, I get it. I would also want the creator involved, but, like, I mean, that's how rights work. I'm sure Nintendo doesn't let Dylan Cuthbert know every time they're working on a Star Fox game either. Nope. Like, it's just...
He didn't make the characters, did he?
Sure, I'll bet they don't let Imamura know anymore.
No. Yeah. I remember he has to go find some buddies to go out drinking with or something.
Yeah. Though I will say, I think Monkey Island, with or without creator blessing, super good pairing for Sea of Thieves.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm surprised it took this long.
Yes. Well, and after doing the Pirates of the Caribbean thing that they did, which was like a legit its own storyline that you could play through.
And it was like really good stuff.
Yeah, that's I'm very excited about it. So that's awesome.
I should get back to playing Sea of Thieves. I still think that like when we kind of shake out, like look at like, I don't know, like the past 5 to 10 years of video games, I feel like Sea of Thieves is going to be one that's like, that was one of the best games. Just like what a cool concept. And it is a unique hangout, do pirate stuff game.
Right, because there's no, I was trying to explain that to somebody today, that like there's no like leveling system. Like as far as like your stats, like any of your abilities.
Like, it's more like you just collect stuff. Like,
right. But like it doesn't like a person who boots up the game for the first time and a person who's 300 hours in theoretically equally matched.
Yeah.
It would just be their skill that would be the difference. Which I think is awesome.
Yep. Because you do have those moments where, I mean, I don't think I was ever particularly good at Sea of Thieves, but like, because everybody kind of has that skill level, like, yeah, you might get clowned on people a lot, but you also might do the clowning every now and then.
Yeah. And then also at this, which is going to be my segue, unless you want to talk about anything else, but also at this was Star Wars Outlaws. Which is the first time we've finally seen Ubisoft's open world Star Wars game that has been talked about in the background for a long time. It looks great.
It's really good.
I'm sure it will be an Ubisoft game, but I don't think I care. I think I'm into it. It's running in Snowdrop, which is the same engine that runs Starlink. And I did mean to say Starlink that time. And when you look at like the planet to space transitions and like the little like trickery that you can see in the background, this is like 100% built on the burnt bones of Starlink. And that's
beautiful. They harvested the ships that they had to make in plastic to power this game.
Yeah.
No, it looks great. It's Star Wars GTA where you're like a bounty hunter. Like this looks great. I'm very excited for this game. I'm kind of fine with it coming out in 2024 because by the time it comes out, I will have hopefully played through Jedi Survivor.
Yes.
But yeah, like optimistic for it. And I am glad when we look at Star Wars games that it's not like everyone's going to be a Ubisoft game. Because I was talking to someone recently about Assassin's Creed games where I played Origins and like half of Odyssey. And those games are very good, but they're so bloated. And I know, I think it's Mirage is the one that they said, like, we're going back to the basics.
Yeah.
But even still, like, I remember, like, oh, Assassin's Creed Valhalla looks fun. And then, like, I talked to somebody who played it. And I was like, this sounds like another job. And that's fine. Yeah. I still think those games are very fun. Like, pretty much every
Assassin's Creed game. You get your money's worth out of them.
Every Assassin's Creed game that I played except for 3 on Wii U. I've had a great time with, and that's a little bit, I don't think 3 is as good, and also 3 on Wii U ran like shit.
I will say I have played 3 on systems that run it very well, still not good, so
but that's how I look at Outlaws, is that like I do not want to play all of the Ubisoft games, but I will play this Ubisoft game.
Yeah.
And I think we had another potential fight, is that while I did not see James Cameron blather on, I thought that Avatar open world game looked neat. But I also, after seeing Outlaws, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to play the Avatar game.
So my thing, this is a weird complaint. So cards on the table, I think the Avatar movies are like actively bad. I just sat through whatever the second one's called.
Way of Water. I still have not seen it. I probably will.
Holy crap.
When I have a lot of time.
I laughed out loud at not the right points. Choices were made in that movie. And if you like it, I'm really happy for you.
It is,
but woof.
Like, I rewatched the first one for like the first time since theaters a couple months ago, and I was kind of taken aback by, even though I remember being like, this looks very nice. I saw it in 3D and stuff back in like the 25 years ago when it came out or whatever. But I was like, I just watched it on TV and like cable too, like with commercials and shit. And I was like blown away by how enjoyably compelling it was. I'm not going to say great. Like, once again, like, it's a very, like, I think that at least that first one is like a well-shot movie. I think the effects are really good for what they were. I mean, it is like James Cameron had to like invent a new cinema in order to make these things and spend billions of dollars and stuff. So it better look good.
Yeah, better.
But
yeah.
Like, I still think it's overlong. Some of it's like very basic, but like, I kind of get the appeal, at least of the first one. I'm in no rush to watch the second one, but I do look forward to seeing it to see, like, does that have the same spirit? Like, will I be able to be like, okay, this isn't like my favorite movie of all time, but I get why people would be really into this, because that's kind of how I feel about the first one.
I mean, I will say I did not fall asleep. so that's something. But no, it's largely, if you're like me and watched Alien and then watched Aliens and went, oh, James Cameron's a bad writer who didn't understand what these movies were about, all of those feelings will come with with Avatar 2.
Yeah, I feel like if we're looking at the comparison of Ridley Scott versus Jim Cameron, I think we're on the same side here.
Yes. I would love to see what Ridley Scott could do with an Avatar movie.
Yeah, not gonna say Ridley Scott has made nothing but bangers, but like, I look to Blade Runner and Alien, and those are maybe two of the best movies of their era. Maybe incredible films.
I think I like Ridley Scott's bad movies more than James Cameron's best movies.
I would need to. That's.
But yeah. Also, when you do watch it, see if you can pick out what James Cameron thinks of maternal women in his life, because like, there's like, we got through that movie and both my wife and I were like, oh, he needs like a therapist for some things, but that's fine. Anyway,
oh God,
point is,
Ridley Scott's a legend, man.
Yeah,
Thelma
and
Louise, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down, Matchstick Men. Okay, that Robin Hood movie. Yeah, no, that's what I wanted to look for, like one that kind of sucked. And like, guess what? Robin Hood and Exodus: Gods and Kings. I'm not gonna say they're good, but I enjoyed
the Exodus one is rough. Robin Hood's like okay. I rewatched that one recently. I will say, director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven, probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Has like,
I've never seen
Star
the director's
Wars
cut.
Prequel. It has like Star Wars prequel level writing. It's terrible, but it's great. Yeah, watch the director's cut. They cut out like most of the plot for the theatrical run. I know people who hated it, and then I got them to watch the director's cut, and they were like, oh no, that was great.
It's not that on any kind of streaming service? I might have to look into that, because I watched that.
I own the director's cut twice, so I've never watched it on a streaming service.
And The Last Duel, I still haven't seen that, but I feel like that's a movie that I would enjoy. Give me a
but
good
the
Affleck
Avatar
and Damon
game.
Written movie. Yeah.
The
it looks fine.
My weird complaint with it is I think it really misses the visual style of those movies. It looks kind of desaturated and like really like deep blacks and all the shadows, where you watch those movies and they're like very bright and colorful, and that's kind of what like visually makes them appealing. And I feel like the game just does not seem to match the look. It to me, it looks like those like early 360 games where they were like, look, we can do shadows on everything. And so everything had these really black stenciled shadows.
I think my big takeaway from that is that I just looked at what they were talking about of like, I feel like some of the ideas of that game being a little bit more of like an ethereal open world game. And like, if that's done right, I could have a good time with that.
Yes, I would bet you money that James Cameron can say whatever he wants. I don't know if James Cameron plays games, but he gave the rights to Ubisoft, and they're not going to make an ethereal open world game.
Yeah.
They're going to make Far Cry. Like,
I have living rent free in my mind is E3 2009, when James Cameron came out on the Ubisoft E3 stage and talked about Avatar before we had seen anything about the movie at all for like a half an hour. I believe someone said it looked like a homeless person walked up on stage and like just started talking about their dreams,
which is honestly on my bingo card for the Game Awards next year. But we'll see. Yeah. And then the other thing at the, well, there are a couple other things at Ubisoft. I will say
Prince of Persia
looks great. I saw a tweet comparing the likes versus dislike ratio of that trailer on the PlayStation YouTube channel versus the Nintendo YouTube channel. And I'll just say Nintendo fans seem more accepting of stylized 2D games.
Yes.
The PlayStation one was like 75% dislike. And I was like, whoa.
I still think if I were Mr. PR man, I probably would have rearranged some of those trailers. You come out with that animated trailer at Summer Games Fest kickoff thing, and then you do the like the gameplay reveal and breakdown, because I think that initial trailer, and I can, YouTube compression is at play here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that initial trailer, I was like, this game looks like it's fun to play, but I don't like the look of it. And then it was seeing that animated trailer, which I know it's not representative of the game, but you can see like, okay, that's kind of what they're going for. And then seeing more of a breakdown of the gameplay got me very excited for that game.
Yeah.
And I'm also it is by Rayman Origins and Legends team, which.
Okay. I didn't put that together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're, I saw a quote from an interview, I think, that like said that like, yeah, like we worked on that game. And we are taking what we learned on bad 2D games and applying that to here and making it more of a Metroidvania.
Sweet. Yeah. Yeah. That looks good. We briefly mentioned Assassin's Creed. I will say I'm very excited for Assassin's Creed Mirage. It's the first game they've made since Assassin's Creed Revelations that seems to acknowledge that Assassin's Creed 1 happened, which was like my favorite one. So I'm very excited about that.
I had a very good time with Assassin's Creed 1. It's a weird game. Like they made the right decision from a financial perspective by what they did with 2 and beyond, but Assassin's Creed 1 is a deeply weird game and I love it.
It's flawed, and I will say, like, Assassin's Creed 2 is maybe one of the best examples I've ever seen of a studio listening to every critique of a game and just delivering on the sequel. But I do think Assassin's Creed Mirage will be an interesting experiment for something that we talked about last week, which is like, can Nintendo go back to like classic 3D Zelda once they've been in Breath of the Wild for a while? That kind of feels like what Assassin's Creed is doing. Since Origin, like, they've been a very different kind of game, and now they're just going to make a smaller one, a more constrained one, and also a cheaper one that's more in line with the original. And I'm very interested to see how this game does, and I think it'll be an interesting sort of, obviously Assassin's Creed isn't Zelda, but it's kind of an interesting case study that I think is comparable to that same situation. I'll be curious to see how it plays out.
So I got some quick hitters from from this fake E3 weekend thing. When Disney Illusion Island was revealed, I want to say in the direct last year, was that the Game Awards? I forgot. It was revealed sometime within the past.
I think it
months.
Was a. I believe it was a Nintendo Direct.
Okay, so Disney Illusion Island, the cutesy hand drawn animated multiplayer platformer with Mickey, Goofy, and the gang. It is made by Dalala. Probably saying it wrong, but they are the studio that did the recent Battletoads game, which I didn't think was good. So when I first heard about it, I was like, don't care. But seeing some of the coverage, I'm even like, we have an interview. Is that live or?
Yes, that is up.
Okay. Yep. Okay. We have an interview with the developers up, and like, I like what they're saying. Yeah, like some of the things that they're saying about how like we wanted to make like a kind of like a family platformer, so to speak, where like there's a friendliness to it. It's not that it's, you know, cake easy, but like it's made not to be like a hardcore platformer. It's supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. And that kind of speaks to me. I do like some of the things that they're like, we're making a Mickey-vania.
Yeah. Yeah, that's they call out like it being a really good like kind of intro to that genre, and then specifically call out how like stuff like Hollow Knight just isn't accessible. And I'm like, hey, I agree with that statement. Like, that's great.
Yeah, like, I mean, just look, I think you can find my tweets from whenever I started playing Hollow Knight that, like, I think the intro to that game is just absolute cheeks. And then the game gets a lot better once you kind of get past that initial area. But I think it's not a good on-ramp for new players.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that this could be that entry point, that kind of like let's just have fun with this style of game, because not every game needs to be, you know, hard as hell.
Yeah.
So I'm way more excited and interested in this game. It's coming out at the end of July. We have that interview, some hands-on impressions up on the site. Sonic Superstars on that 2D bent. I just gotta know. Like, I don't really like the look of it, but people are saying it plays well. It's got the right physics.
Okay. It looked... Maybe the trailer was bad, because the trailer looked... like noticeably slow. I don't know if you got that impression.
Yeah. I was not impressed by the initial trailer.
Yeah.
I can't believe they're not making Sonic Mania 2. What are y'all doing? Like, the first one ripped. Yeah. And then the fact that Arzest is behind this is in my heart, I hope that Arzest like just makes a banger of a video game, because I feel like I spent way too much time looking at Arzest, their development history, and being like, what can we actually be like? No, they are bad. Or is it that Nintendo wanted them to make a budget Yoshi's 3DS game? Like,
yeah. Yeah, they make like just totally okay games. Like,
yeah.
Not games where you're like, oh, these are terrible, but also not games that like you're ever going to play again. Like, they...
Well, if we do our Hey Pikmin game club, then true. I'll play one.
Well, I'll be playing it for the first time. So yeah,
it'll be my second time. I still Hey Pikmin just gets more shit than it deserves. It's a fine game.
I want to like it, so I'm interested
on
in
my.
It.
I'm gonna give y'all an exclusive of my Pikmin rankings.
Okay,
Pikmin 2's behind Hey Pikmin. I think Hey Pikmin is... I have more fun with Hey Pikmin than I do Pikmin 2.
That's if I were gonna, I mean, Pikmin 2 is definitely at the bottom for me. So yeah, that makes sense.
3, like, no one's even close to Pikmin 3. And then the original's fun. I still think the original's a good time. I'd never want to play 2 again.
Am I allowed to have Tinykin on my Pikmin ranking?
I should play Tinykin. It's on my wish
list. Oh, man. That might be my favorite.
I'll play
Pikmin
Tinykin.
Game. That's honestly, yeah. No, Tinykin's so good.
We did have that thing back when Alex used to be a part of the show. Miss you, Alex. I hope the new job's worth it.
he still listens to us, I think, at his new job. So hi, Alex.
Hi. But we had that whole thing about like picking indie games. To give a follow up to that, I got Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, I think, live on the show or right after it. I put a couple hours into that. That is not a game for me. Nope. I learned something about myself, and that's don't bother with Rebel Galaxy anymore.
But Tinykin
will have to be maybe that'll be my next like game that you are wild about that I have not played yet.
I feel like Tinykin is way safer.
Yes,
I was interested in Tinykin
before the hype.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you not to buy Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, because I love it. But yeah, I didn't expect you to. I would have been really surprised if you came on the show and were like, dude, I'm hooked. Like, I love this game.
I will say I respect it. It's just not for me. It's nothing. Yeah. Nothing against Rebel Galaxy Outlaw. No, it's just we're not compatible.
It's like me playing a turn-based JRPG. Yeah. The odds are not good.
You playing Super Mega Baseball 4, like, you're not going to be like me being like, Carlos Baerga's here.
Yeah, exactly. Which makes me very curious about what you'll think of Starfield when that comes out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it definitely is a little bit more in that space sim direction, as you said, than I typically engage with.
Yeah.
I'm also, on a more macro level, I'm interested what everybody's going to think about Starfield, because I feel like people are looking at that like, oh, it's going to be like Skyrim. And I think it's going to be a different brand of that in a way that Bethesda hasn't done before.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what it needs to be.
Like that's the goal, but it's like, are people going to bounce off of that, or are they going to love it? Well, stay tuned. Right. 3 months.
Hopefully it'll be just a gateway drug for people to, for like space sim fans to get into Western RPGs, and for Western RPG fans to get into space sims. We'll just have a big exchange. It'll be great. Okay, I think you had a couple other games you wanted to,
The one thing that I want to say is there's a Ghost Trick Phantom Detective demo on the eShop, as well as, I think, PlayStation and Steam. If you've never played Ghost Trick, go play it. Go play that demo. I think that Ghost Trick is one of the best games ever made. It is coming out on Switch on June 30th. I will get it on Switch and play it for a third time. I adore that game. It is incredible.
Will you have time to play it since you're going to be so busy with Everybody 1-2 Switch?
I don't know.
I assume you're on the review for that.
Yeah, when I'm hanging out with friends, I'll be playing Everybody 1-2 Switch.
That will be the last time you see those friends.
That's my secret, Captain. I have two children. I never hang out with friends anymore.
Maybe your kids will like Everybody 1-2 Switch.
Honestly, they probably would.
They might. I'll judge them a little bit. I am, like, my respect will go down thing, like, a little bit for your children.
I have heard from unanimously from everybody that I've talked to that have seen anything or played anything about that game. All I've heard is that it's absolutely dog shit terrible.
I've never heard that much like pre-release unified negative buzz from people who would know. Like, it's not like Metroid Prime Federation Force. Right. It's not like people being like, oh, I don't like the look of that trailer. It's like people who have like played and like seen the game.
Like, you know, industry sources stuff. Like, I have talked to people who have played this game and they said, like, this is absolute crap.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a reason Nintendo is just dumping it. And
But like, it does make me fascinated by what this game is.
Actually, I'm gonna, what day, so it comes out the 30th, what day of the week is that? Is that a
Friday.
Thursday?
Friday? I think so.
Okay. Friday. Does Nintendo Direct ever happen on Friday?
No.
Can they bury Everybody 1-2 Switch under a Direct?
I do think if we have a Nintendo Direct, I would not be surprised if it's the 28th and makes no mention of Everybody 1-2 Switch.
Yeah, it will not, no matter when it comes out. It will not mention it. I'm just wondering if they can purposefully bury it.
We've gotten late enough in the podcast. I think there might be a Nintendo Direct either the couple days before 1-2 Switch or the week before. We'll see.
I like that you pitched that you were like, we've gotten late enough in the podcast, as if like people had
anybody
to earn.
Cares.
Like they were like, if you had done that early on, people would have been like, I can't listen to this kind of podcast. That would have just nobody. If there's one thing I know from the internet, it's that people hate when podcast hosts talk about Nintendo Directs coming up. Nobody ever talks about that.
But I mean, for me, there's a little bit of logic to it, and that I think Nintendo has to be like, there are games beyond Pikmin 4. We swear to God.
Yes. I don't think we've ever been in this situation where Nintendo literally has no other dated games. It just ends.
We've definitely had times where it's been like, oh, there's like four that are, you know, maybe don't have an exact window, but they're there. Like right now, if we were to have like the quarterly report, like what's on that list? Metroid Prime 4 TBD and nothing else.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's. Which, I mean, you know, maybe that's good odds for Metroid Prime 4 that they've run out of everything else. So they have to make it.
Wouldn't be surprised if we get some, or at least this time next month, I think we will know about a game coming out beyond Pikmin 4.
Yeah, even if it's not a direct, I would almost expect just like some trailers, like just a drop of some sort.
Yeah. Guess what? F-Zero. Let's go.
Yep. They're just whatever you guys want.
Yeah.
It plays GameCube games now. There you go.
Another three Warriors games will be announced.
That would be fine.
Play Ghost Trick. John, have you played Ghost Trick?
Nope.
It's very good.
I didn't play DS games because I didn't like the DS. That's
well,
my
now
controversial.
It's not on DS.
That's true.
I did after Apollo Justice trilogy was announced because I've I've played some of those games, but not all. Like, I've never played Apollo Justice Ace Attorney, but I played some of the fifth one. I re-downloaded the Great Ace Attorney because I got a case into that. I think the first case in that game is bad.
Yeah.
But I do want to work my way through that game because I've heard it's very, very good, and I enjoy myself a good Ace Attorney game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we're done. A Whisker Squadron. Talk about Whisker Squadron.
Yeah, I think Lemonade on Discord asked. So the Whisker Squadron beta was released to, like, I think $15 plus Kickstarter backers over the weekend. And or it's the Whisker Squadron Survivor. Sorry, I should clarify. If you haven't been following Whisker Squadron, it was announced as a roguelike Star Fox procedurally generated style game. It has since split off into two different games. One of them is like has some like 3D free flight stuff, is totally procedural going across this galaxy, a mix of all range mode and rail line levels and some like resource gathering and stuff like that. And the other one, Whisker Squadron Survivor, which is coming out first and what's what we just got the beta for, is a completely rail line Star Fox meets Vampire Survivors, and it's very good.
It seems very cool. I'm a $15 plus backer Whisker Squadron. You should
check if you don't. Do you know if you got a code?
I did.
Okay, I was gonna say if you didn't, I may have backed at a point where they sent me a lot of codes. So if you need any codes, I've got a code. But yeah, the premise of the game is, if you haven't played like Vampire Survivors, is you play a Star Fox mission essentially, that's procedurally generated. As you shoot down enemies, they drop little crystals. If you collect those crystals, they're like experience points. Once you level up, you choose a random upgrade, and then you keep going. And it's just a question of how long can you survive. If you get through like a certain number of I think it's like 10 in the final game waves of a level, then you beat that level. But it's obviously different every time you play it. You unlock more levels, you unlock more upgrades, you can unlock like permanent things, you can spend any like points you have left over at the end of a mission to like permanently upgrade your ship, to, you know, make it so you can more easily get farther the next time. And it's a really good simple gameplay loop. The combo of the two, of kind of like the Star Fox rail shooter with like the Vampire Survivors formula, works really well. And you can play as my cats as an unlockable character. So, you know, I forget, it's good.
Is that coming to Switch, that version?
I don't know. So Whisker Squadron, as it was announced on Kickstarter originally, Switch was a planned platform for it.
Yeah.
But they haven't firmly committed to anything.
Okay.
So the plan is to get it on consoles in the vaguest of ways. But it kind of sounds like, I remember talking to Aaron, and I think this is in the interview that we posted when their Kickstarter was live. But like, you know, if Xbox were to come in and be like, you want Game Pass money, they'd probably take the Game Pass money and go on Xbox. Yeah. So I think it's just a question of like what makes the most sense. It seems like it had run fine on Switch. It's a very pretty game, but it seems very scalable. I can run it on my work computer with it, which is a piece of garbage. So it's a pretty scalable game. But yeah, I believe it's coming out, like, in theory, the beta that I have is, I believe they said it's pretty much done. So I believe it's coming out very soon. Like within the next like month or two, I think is the plan. So it's on Steam, wishlist it. Maybe if we're very good friends, ask me, maybe I'll send you a code, but I might be out of them by the time you ask me. So it's cool. It's great. Yay. I'm excited for it to actually come out. I think that's it. I don't think we have anything else to talk about. Thank you very much for listening. You can send us listener mail on maybe what you thought of one of those presentations. If you had anything that you thought was particularly interesting, your thoughts on Avatar 2. Maybe you noticed the subtle references to James Cameron not being a big fan of women in general. You can talk about that. You can follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. Our email address is connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. I don't think I said that. And yeah, that's the episode. Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Connectivity is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon and by Wongo Puzzles. Are you tired of the same old boring puzzles? Mix things up with Wongo Puzzles. Each puzzle is a custom design with intricate patterns and whimsical shapes that will keep you engaged for hours. Plus, their eco-friendly materials and commitment to sustainability make Wongo Puzzles a guilt-free way to unwind. They are 100% wooden puzzles. They'll last forever. Each piece is hand-drawn, so no two pieces are the same, and you'll discover some fun, whimsy pieces as you work through it. They come in a custom wooden box, which is perfect for storage and gifting. With stunning designs and unique shapes, Wongo Puzzles are a cut above the rest. So what are you waiting for? Go to wongopuzzles.com and pick your puzzle today, and be sure to use the promo code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order. This is the most fun you've had with a puzzle, guaranteed, or your money back. Go to wongopuzzles.com and use the code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order and get puzzling right now.